Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the culture of fear at Port Authority. And I don't mean the bus terminal.
Is there a culture of fear? I think your answer speaks for itself.
On the hot seat for this, Governor Chris Christie and his appointees over the mysterious lane closure at the George Washington Bridge. Also today, context and a movie, Inside Llewyn Davis. Slate film critic Dana Stevens meets music writer Elijah Wald to discuss Greenwich Village 1961 and the musicians we find there in the latest from the Coen brothers. And for anyone listening who remembers Greenwich Village 1961, we will take your calls. Plus, the economic history of your Christmas tree today and Time Magazine's Person of the Year. As you were just hearing, if you were listening to the BBC, it is Pope Francis. We'll talk about the impact of the People's Pope, as the headline calls him. But first, Congress to Earth. We have a budget. We'll talk about that and more with Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney now from the Lower Hudson Valley. That's the 18th Congressional District in New York State. Putnam, Orange, Dutchess counties, and some of northeastern Westchester. Congressman Maloney, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you.
First, some old business, if I might. We invited you after you got discussed on the show last month for being one of the Democrats who voted with the Republicans to weaken the Affordable Care Act by allowing permanent sale of new policies without the ACA's benefit standards, what the president calls substandard policies. We had callers from the district who voted for you but want you primaried for that vote. Will you explain it to your constituents?
Well, sure, and I guess I would quibble with your characterization of voting to weaken the act. Nothing could be further from the truth. I support the Affordable Care Act. I voted consistently against defunding it or delaying the act, let alone repealing it. I want to make it work better, and I have said from the beginning there's things in here that I like and there's some things that I'm concerned about, and that's what I hear from the people in the Hudson Valley. They aren't invested in this red team, blue team fight. What they want is they want better health care at more affordable cost, and I do think credibility matters if we're going to build long-term support for this very important program that is going to change lives. We are in New York in better shape than most folks around the country on this, and I'm very pleased with that. But it doesn't mean we can't do it better. It doesn't mean we should be making excuses for a website that should have worked and didn't. And it doesn't mean that if the president makes a promise to people, we don't have to honor that. And that's all I've been saying.
Well, the president wanted this suspension of some of those standards for 1 year for existing policyholders to keep his promise that if people like their old insurance, they can keep it. But reopening that market to new customers, as that bill would have done, wouldn't that destroy one of the foundation blocks of the ACA having these benefit standards?
Well, certainly not in New York, where it's not going to have any impact at all. But the fact of the matter
because
is,
the state has those standards
yeah, that's
already.
Right. That's right. And I think that the president took this action, which was, I understand the distinction you're making, but I think the bottom line is that, the president made this representation to the American people, and I think that that credibility matters. And I want people to understand that I'm gonna vote that way.
But on that distinction, just to follow up one more time, one of the things the Affordable Care Act is trying to fix is what I would call the insurance company racket of selling policies that seem to be good bargains, but then when you get sick, they don't actually cover that much, and people don't realize it until it's too late.
Yeah, Brian, listen, but the president didn't go around for 3 years saying that we're going to end the insurance company racket, and so even if you like your policy, we think it's a racket and we're going to take it away from you. So if you want to say that, that's great, and you're making a really important point, and I agree with you. But people should understand so we don't scare anybody. I mean, in New York, we've had much better laws than a lot of places around the country. We don't have a lot of these fly-by-night companies,
right.
And we are not seeing people lose the coverage. And so it's just not – it's really not an issue as much in New York.
But for the nation –
I do believe as someone who spent 3 years working for President Clinton in the White House, that when the President of the United States says something and does it to bring the country along in support of a very important – life-changing reform for millions of families. I mean, this law is changing millions of lives for the better, and we need to have the country's support for it. The president has to be very careful about the representations he makes. And if you Bill Clinton and I, you know, said the same thing that week. Like, if you tell people they can keep their policies, you know, that has to be the truth. Now, listen, I just want to be very clear
about the question that I'm asking, because the distinction that I'm asking about in that bill is the provision that would have allowed insurance companies to sell those substandard policies to new people. So going beyond letting people keep their policies, which was the president's promise. And you voted for that.
Well, look, you don't get to write every provision of every law you vote for. And just as there are things in other, you know, pieces of legislation that I support that I don't like, that's not a provision that I would have included in that piece of legislation. It was, however, my only opportunity to vote on 80% of what the president had done the day before, which was make real the promise he made to the American people. So, and before we get too hung up on it, this is a vote in the House of Representatives that is you know, not going to affect people in New York, because one, it's not becoming law, and two, because we're in a better situation in New York. But what I'm trying to tell you is that I think it matters that we have some credibility on what we tell people on this, and we do that in service of making this reform work, because the Affordable Care Act has to work. And what I want to have happen is I want the policy to work, and I'll let other people play the political game.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, my guest, Democrat from the Lower Hudson Valley, Putnam, Dutchess, Orange counties, part of northeastern Westchester. Think of it as the I-84 district in the area north of the city. What one other ACA thing, not related? What do you think about this new legal challenge to the act? Apparently, the wording in the original law might have been to promise sliding scale subsidies based on income to people who buy policies on the state exchanges, but not on the federal exchange, which more than 30 states are relying on because they refuse to set up their own. Now, you weren't in Congress yet to vote for the law, so you probably didn't read that fine print at the time. But have you seen the language? Have you heard about this controversy?
Yeah, I have heard something about it, but I'm not sure what your question is.
I'm just curious if there's talk among you and your colleagues about the intent. I guess it seems from what I've read like it was clearly a case of bad writing or maybe a typo, that clearly the intent of the president and Congress was to subsidize whoever buys exchange-based Affordable Care Act policies on whatever exchange. But there seems to be, you know, a legal effort now by opponents of the ACA that, again, could serve to in effect destroy the act if the courts accept it. So I'm just curious if you have a take as a member of Congress as to what the language intended.
Yeah, look, I agree with you that it's clear that the law intended to provide incentives for people to secure, you know, affordable health care through a competitive private marketplace, and we should do everything we can to support that because we want this policy to work. And you know, God knows the extreme irresponsible elements in the Republican Party down here are, you know, doing everything they can to try to kill this, to try to repeal it, to try to go back and fight and, you know, stick with the old system, which was really broken and hurting millions of people. So what I want to do is I want to continue to improve on the Affordable Care Act, because the truth is that there are things we can do better in this. And I'm very concerned about some of the things in this, particularly you know, around small business, around the way it's impacting folks in unions who have had, you know, these multi-employer Taft-Hartley plans that are getting disrupted by the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot of things we can do better and improve on. The big drivers, like you're talking about, letting people have access to coverage, you know, regardless of pre-existing conditions, that's changing millions of lives. Having them see through exchanges what's available out there, getting the price competition going to help consumers. You know, these things have to work, and we've got to get young people in the system. We've got to get everybody taking responsibility for themselves so that we don't do it in emergency rooms and more expensive ways. And the early data is pretty good. I mean, if you look at the decline in healthcare inflation, we have healthcare costs growing at the lowest rate in 50 years right now. That has enormous benefits for all of us in terms of the national debt and our deficits going forward. And it's great news for the potential of the Affordable Care Act to get us better care at more affordable costs.
By the way, for people who don't live in your district but elsewhere in the area, You have such an interesting swing district right here in Blue New York, just a little north of the city. People will remember Republican Congresswoman Sue Kelly from the 90s, then Democrat John Hall, who was a musician in the band Orleans, then Tea Party Republican Nan Hayworth after that, and then you defeated her last year. Why do people here keep swinging back and forth, which doesn't happen in many places in the country anymore?
Well, that's a trend we're going to break, I can tell you that, Brian. But I think, look, here's the bottom line. I have one of the most competitive districts in the United States, and we don't have many competitive districts left in the United States, and that is really killing our country. And so there is a silver lining to being in a super competitive district. It means that I got to listen to everybody, and I've got to worry about losing my job. And I think we'd have a better Congress if more members of Congress worried about losing their jobs. Too many members of Congress get elected comfortably, easily, and that allows on both sides of the aisle a lot of this kind of ideological, you know, frolicking and detouring when we should be trying to listen to everybody, finding common sense solutions. Not walking around saying I'm not going to listen to anybody I disagree with or can't work with anybody I disagree with, all this stuff that led to the shutdown and all this gridlock. So listen, I have a district that looks like America, and I've never heard it described as the I-84 district before. I'd like to be, you know, people should think of it as, Bear Mountain Bridge to Walkway over the Hudson, both sides of the river.
Right.
I've got all of Orange County. I got a little Westchester and all of Putnam and parts of Dutchess. It's a great district. It's a beautiful district, and there's a lot of folks who just want government to stop being part of the problem and to start, you know, being part of the solution on everyday things that affect them, like jobs and their retirement and their health care. And that's what I'm trying to focus on.
Which I guess brings us to the budget compromise agreed to by Democrat Patty Murray and Republican Paul Ryan yesterday, the two budget committee chairs. This will avoid at least a New Year's government shutdown cliff. And here they both are saying how much they don't like things about it that are in this compromise. Patty Murray first.
This isn't the plan I would have written on my own. I'm pretty sure that Chairman Ryan wouldn't have written it on his own. And there are obviously differences between our parties when it comes to our budget values and priorities. I was disappointed that we weren't able to close even a single corporate tax loophole. I know many Republicans had hoped this would be an opportunity to make some of the kinds of changes to Medicare and Social Security they've advocated for.
We knew that if we forced each other to compromise a core principle, we would get nowhere. That is why we decided to focus on where the common ground is. So that's what we've done.
Republican Congressman Paul Ryan, preceded by Democratic Senator Patty Murray. Congressman Maloney, are you prepared to vote for this budget?
Well, I'm looking at it. I don't know. I can tell you we've got to get rid of the sequester, which is hurting people in my district. You know, we're furloughing people at West Point and Stewart Air National Guard Base. We're throwing kids out of Head Start. Sequester is a dumb idea from the last Congress, and I believe in balancing the budget. You know, we did it during the Clinton administration. You know, there's a way to do it without going after Medicare and Head Start and Social Security. I want to look at this agreement. I am pleased that, you know, we're talking to each other, and I'm pleased that, Republicans and Democrats are not just, you know, locked up in gridlock, but I want to see the details. They just announced this thing last night. I want to know what I'm talking about before I take a position on it.
Some Democrats have already said they don't like it because it sacrifices extended unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed. Do you have to be willing to throw the long-term unemployed under the bus to vote for this budget?
No, absolutely not, and I won't. And I think that's I'm glad you brought that up because it's something that's very important. We need to extend those benefits. I'd like to see us raise the minimum wage at the same time to a wage somebody could actually live on. It's outrageous what we're doing to working and middle-class families in this country. But I will tell you, and we need to support them. But I will tell you that I don't think that even the Democrats who are I think that you're going to have to see some action on unemployment benefits in addition to this. The question is whether they included it as part of the deal.
Apparently not, from what I've read, as part of the deal. Is that your understanding, or are you not sure yet?
Yeah, no, that's right. But that doesn't mean it won't get done. It just means that it wasn't part of this package of things they've agreed to. But it's one of the things I'm concerned about. I want to understand what the assurances are that we're going to get action on that. In time to do some people some good. And by the way, I'm not convinced that Paul Ryan's going to be able to sell this to the Tea Party guys in his own party. I mean, you know, I've watched these guys on the floor vote against Sandy relief for New York. I've watched them vote against the Violence Against Women Act. I watched them, you know, hold up the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Right now, they're holding up immigration reform that is critically important for our country, even though there's more than enough votes to pass it right now. And by the way, they blew up the last deal that John Boehner had with Harry Reid to, you know, to get his own sequester number in exchange for not shutting down the government because they wanted to have all these crazy votes on the Affordable Care Act.
And
so
clearly
I'm not at all clear that Paul Ryan's going to be able to go back and get the votes for this.
And that'll be interesting to see. I certainly heard them railing against it on conservative talk radio yesterday.
That's right.
And the real deficit hawks aren't so happy either because this does very little deficit reduction long term, and they believe we face a real time bomb with the baby boom retirement benefits, especially Medicare and to a lesser extent Social Security. Do you think the Democrats are acting irresponsibly for making that harder?
No, but I will tell you, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this, and the details really matter. I mean, I mentioned before, you know, I worked in the Clinton White House. We balanced the budget. So these guys talk about it. We did it. And if we had left the Clinton policies in place, our national debt would be zero today, zero, not $17 trillion, and we would have hit it 2 years ago. So we are making choices here, and the choices matter. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have cut discretionary spending to the lowest level in 50 or 60 years. We have brought the deficit as a percentage of GDP down from 5% to, I think it's going to be 2% next year. We have made a lot of progress on the spending side, and we've only done $600 billion in additional revenue on the highest income earners. That was done the day before I came to the Congress. So we've done about $3.6 to $4 trillion of deficit and debt reduction over the next 10 years. And all of that's been cuts except for $600 billion in revenue. I think there's a lot more we could do to balance that out. And so I just think, you know, count me in on balancing the budget. But, man, how you do it really matters. And I think that the Republicans have been just obsessed with cutting discretionary spending. And we are now at the point where it just doesn't make sense to continue to do it.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney from what he calls the walkway over the Hudson District, which, by the way, since you mentioned it, I just rode on my bike for the first time a few weeks ago from Poughkeepsie over to the New Paltz side.
And that's nice, right?
Just fabulous.
No, great. It's a beautiful thing. If people haven't been up to the walkway, they should come. It's a great day trip. You can come up on the train. You can come up by car. It's real easy to do. I mean, I have one of the most beautiful districts in the Congress, and if folks listening in New York City haven't been up the Hudson River lately, come up to Cold Spring, where I live, come to the DM Museum in Beacon, come to Newburgh and see the history there. And it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. Storm King Mountain, the Art Center over there in Orange County. Thank you for letting me plug it, because the Hudson Valley is one of the most beautiful areas anywhere in the United States.
Which brings me to the last thing that I want to ask you about, because you can, of course, take the Hudson Line right near to the bridge there at the Poughkeepsie stop. And, of course, the Metro North Hudson Line is the one that had that tragic derailment the other day. You're on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, so you would not be new to this kind of thing. Is Metro North doing enough to prevent another accident of the kind that happened in Spuytenduyville?
Well, let me tell you something. You know, I ride that train a lot. Everybody in my district rides that train a lot. I knew one of the four people killed on that train. He's a friend of mine. He was from Cold Spring.
I'm
His
sorry.
Wife, Nancy, is a friend of ours. Our kids go to school together and play together. This one's personal for me. You know, last week I introduced legislation that would speed up implementation of what's called positive train control, which the NTSB has told us would have prevented this accident, so that an engineer going too fast can't just be distracted or be asleep or, God forbid, a terrorist attack or something. We can slow these trains down using Wi-Fi and GPS technology. It's already mandated. We're just not getting there fast enough. My bill would make available existing federal financing for this purpose so we can get it done in time to save lives. MTA is moving in this direction, and I want to applaud them for that. They've got a contract out, about $400 million to implement this stuff. It's just got to happen faster, and I'm trying to help. And we can save lives if we act on this. I think it's also good that we get some cameras in these engineering cabins so we understand what's going on and we have some increased visibility on that. Metro North and MTA took a bunch of good steps this week to make this safer. But I'll tell you what, I mean, we've got to invest in our country's infrastructure again. I am on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee. It's one of the reasons I wanted to come to Congress. We need massive investments in our infrastructure, in our airports, in our roads, in our bridges. People in the metropolitan area and in the Hudson Valley don't need to be told this. Anybody who rides on 684 or 84, anybody who's been waiting for the Tappan Zee to get fixed, I mean, you know, and I applaud the governor for making this a priority. We as a country need to invest in our roads, in our bridges, in our water systems, in our electrical grids, in our airports. It's going to create jobs today, yeah, but most importantly, it's going to lay the foundation for much healthier economic growth going forward. And we need to believe in that again. And that's one of the things I'm fighting for in Congress.
One other thing about the accident. The latest evidence indicates the driver may have zoned out 9 or 10 minutes before the crash. It was noticed by a train driver going north, that he didn't dim his lights at a point where that was supposed to happen, minutes before the derailment. The 82-mile-an-hour speed was above the speed limit for the stretch before the Spuyten Duyvil curve. 9 or 10 minutes is a long time for nothing to have kicked in and no one else to have noticed something was amiss. What do you make of that?
Well, you're right. That's an eternity you've got a 135,000-ton locomotive pushing 5 passenger cars at 82 miles an hour when it should be going 30. It takes a lot less time than 9 minutes for tragedy to strike. And we don't need to depend on the alertness of one human being. You know, I want to make sure the investigation's allowed to go forward, but I was down there. I went to the site with Senator Schumer. We got a personal tour by the NTSB officials. You know, these guys are very good at what they do. It's pretty clear what happened here. And we can prevent these accidents if we just invest in our infrastructure and if we do things a little smarter, because, you know, it shouldn't be the case that if this was on a Monday morning instead of a Sunday morning, you know, we would have had 50 people killed and we would have had hundreds injured. And it's tragic enough to lose 4 wonderful people and have 65 hurt. This could have been a lot worse. And we can prevent these kind of accidents if we just get smart on implementing positive train control and investing in our infrastructure.
Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney from the Hudson Valley area, including parts of Orange and Dutchess and Putnam and Westchester counties. Thank you for coming on with us. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, if you haven't heard yet, we will tell you who Time Magazine's Person of the Year is and talk about him. And you, stay with us.